What's up, After Buzzers, and welcome to this special edition of The Voice Of. I have a guest today who is working on this amazing game, you might know it, Mass Effect, and we'll be talking more about that and her exciting career. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Say, I'm like, oh, I think we didn't pass on your music. Or wait, is music going? No. Sorry. I was like, wait, we had our music planned, but it's okay. what's up, After Buzzers? This is The Voice Of, and I'm talking today with Danielle Rain, who is not only a badass in TV shows, she's also a badass voice in video games. And the big game that's coming out, is it out?
It actually came out March 21st.
Yep. Nice. Is Mass Effect Andromeda. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yay. There we go. Sorry. Going a little bit backwards, so you studied theater at you did a conservatory program.
I did. I got a degree in classical theater, and I actually used it when I was in New York City. I would do theater in little basements, head of gabbler, parts like that. I loved it. It was great. I'm glad I did it. It's just like, it's one of those coming of age things in New York City. Yeah. You've got to do theater.
Always.
Yeah.
What was your favorite role?
Head of gabbler. It was fantastic. There was another play that I did also called The Admirable Crichton. And the character Lady Mary, she starts out as this very spoiled rich girl. Mm. And they get shipwrecked. And she has to become this warrior to survive. So it was a fantastic transition. And it was kind of like indicative of my life, you know?
I was just going to ask, did that lead to your other roles later? Because like looking through your film history, it's so many like these tough women, which is awesome.
It's my wheelhouse. It's definitely my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Do you like being more in voice or live action being the tough lady?
Well, I love the live action because I do have weapon skills, and mm-hmm. I did have stage combat training, and then mm-hmm. I did some stunt work at the theme park here, Universal Studios. So I feel comfortable when I have to be physical. What was so cool, though, is, you know, when you do voice acting, you're bringing everything that mm-hmm. you've ever done, all of your training, all of your experience. And it's just right here. It's just you and the microphone. Mm. You don't have to worry if, am I loading the weapon fast enough, or did I get my finger stuck in the chamber, you know, which I've had happen during takes.
Ow.
Yeah, and you've got, I'm bleeding. Mm, yeah, okay. I'm bleeding. But you don't have to worry about that in voiceover. You're just badass without the weapon injuries.
All right. Well, any cool battle scars from those mishaps on set?
You know, not really. I mean, most of the time you keep them pretty small. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like when I was working Hawaii 5-0, mm-hmm. there was a Mossberg, a pump action shotgun that I was working with. And it was my first time working with that kind of shotgun because I had experience with other weapons. And they hand me this one and I'm like, well, I've seen these, but this will be the first time I'm using it. And I had to load it and talk at the same time.
Ooh. Is that one of those, like, you know, pat your head, register,
right?
Stomach?
Yeah. And it's okay if it's a weapon you're used to handling.
Sure.
But if you're learning and you just have had a half hour with it, it's got to look like you've been working with this for 4 years.
Yeah.
And that was the one that I do think, I looked down at my fingers and there were cuts everywhere. Mm. You know, but you just got to keep going. Yeah.
What do you think has been your favorite weapon to use?
Well, the machine gun, the AR-15 that we used to Sarah Connor, mm-hmm. that was really amazing, and I got to be incredibly comfortable where you can do absolutely everything without looking at it.
Mm.
That's when you're really at home with a weapon. But when we opened the show, there was a big event where I came riding in as Sarah Connor on a Jeep, and
ooh, nice.
It was two M60 machine guns, but the big, like the Gatling gun kind of thing. One on the front, one on the back of the Jeep. And I came in shooting the one in the back and then had to flip over to the other one. So that was really exciting, the power of a weapon like that.
Yeah.
At the same time that you're moving on a Jeep. That was really exciting. So,
did you have to be driving, or someone was driving you and then you're on it?
There was a stuntman driving me, Lauren Dennis, and I was just in charge of firing the weapon and making the transition front to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you aren't aware, there was this awesome, I love that stunt show. There's like a stunt / visual show. It was The Terminator at Universal Studios Hollywood. And I love that they had that mix of like, you're watching a show, but then they had real people. So you were the Sarah Connor in that, right?
Yeah. I actually opened the show.
All right.
And I closed the show. I loved doing that
probably
show.
Probably saw you at one point then.
Sarah Connor was one of those characters who, I've always naturally been very muscular, mm-hmm. and it wasn't cool for a long time.
No.
And then when she came up in that movie, you know, I finally felt like, oh, okay, this is not so bad anymore, you know? So when I finally got to play her in the show, that was a dream come true for me. Yeah, and I did it the whole run of it. At the time, that was the most expensive theme park attraction ever created. It cost over $60 million when it was first built in 96. I think that's when they put it up in Florida. The movie alone cost $20 million to make, and it was a 10-minute, you know, 3D movie. But that cost $20 million on its own. So it was a huge deal to get to be something like that.
Do you recall when the one in Hollywood opened? You said
99.
Okay.
Yeah, we opened in May of 99. Oh. We actually did a boot camp, a couple of them, with a guy named Captain Dale Dye. Mm-hmm. He actually trains actors to stop being pussies and be like real military. And they brought him in to train us. We did 3 days up at the L.A. Police Academy, running obstacle courses, learning how to use the weapons, doing a lot of push-ups if we, like, left our sweatshirt on the firing range, things like that. You know, it was drop and give me 20.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. So, but it was great. It was an incredible learning experience. So that's where, like, all the badass stuff, you know, comes from when you get training like that.
Do you feel you were kind of in that physical disposition already, or did this kind of really tip it over the edge?
I'd always been a really athletic actress. I was always a runner. I would work out at the gym. From the time I was like 15, I had biceps from like grooming horses at the time. But it was just natural. And so, yeah, I do think that when I actually met a stuntman, fell in love, married him, and when that happens, your first Valentine's Day date is, hey, let's go jump off the Lost Boys Bridge up in Santa Clarita
Learn
how to free rappel. You know,
so
free rappelling was how I spent a Valentine's Day, you know, jumping off of a bridge. That's what happens. So you get part of that, you get to be part of that world. And eventually people are thinking of you for things left and right. You know, oh, I know she can act, but I know she can also do this. And I know she's willing to swim in water that's 50 degrees or do a fight scene, you know, whatever. So,
what's been the most difficult stunt acting thing you've had to do?
Well, I did have to, for an episode of a TV show called Profiler, I had to swim in water that was 50 degrees. And it was, and they were like, yeah, we think we're going to see a wetsuit, so I had to do it in my underwear. I was supposed to be swimming naked. And
at least you got underwear.
So they have the EMT to make sure that you're going to be okay. But literally, my direction was, I want you to swim out as far as you can, and when you feel like you can't go any farther, then turn around and come back. Which means at that point that you're like, okay, can't take this anymore. That's when you've got to swim all the way back. But you got a real incentive to get to the shore at that point.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
No thanks. you mentioned horses. Have you had a chance to ride horses in any of the shows or films you've worked on?
Yeah, I did a movie that was originally called Big Chuck, Little Chuck, and I think now it's Hollywood. It's a Dog's Life, and I rode horses in that. I also did something for you remember Xena, Princess Warrior?
Love it.
When they released like the DVD edition, they had this event where we rode horses as warriors down Hollywood Boulevard. And, you know, that's really interesting. It's this situation where you're like, I've never ridden a horse down a city street before like this, you know? And certainly not in this costume. But it's been great. To get to be paid to ride horses, you know, that's something I do, you know, my own free time. And to be paid for it, that's great.
I was going to say, you start talking about horses, and I see that smile going up of like, how many horses do you have?
Just one.
One?
He's an Arabian. He's a beautiful, pure white, gorgeous horse. He's like my equine soulmate.
Do you like particular types of riding, like doing jumps or trail rides?
When I was a kid, I did the show jumping. I did cross country. That was probably my favorite because it combines speed and agility over a course, an obstacle course.
What's cross country for horses?
Cross country is literally like you have a long course, maybe it's several miles long, okay. but over the countryside.
Okay.
And the jumps are built into places that Ooh. You wouldn't expect them. Like, maybe they're part of a fence. Maybe they're a picnic table. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're really cryptic. They do a big picnic table with stuff on it, cups, saucers, all sorts of stuff, and you can't knock any of it over. That was combined eventing. It actually came from military training because it showed the dressage, showed the discipline of the horse, the cross-country, the endurance of the horse, and then the show jumping, the bravery of the horse, how high they were willing to jump.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Was there any particular competition that stood out in your memory of a fun experience?
There was this one horse, her name was Lass, and there was a woman who owned her, and she had gained too much weight, and she couldn't ride this beautiful little horse. And they asked me if I would start working with her. And she was pretty green. And I got her to the point where we were able to go into a competition. And we did the combined eventing. And I don't even know if we placed, but with a horse like that who's just been left to pasture and you get to kind of bring her back from that, just the very fact that we competed and finished and nobody got hurt, that was great.
Yeah. Kind of rewind, but I meant to ask too, with the Sarah Connor job, you had the AR-15, but then you had to actually have a license to have that. So talk about that. That's pretty intense, but makes absolute sense as well.
Well, you had to be responsible for the transportation of the weapon through the park. So you would pick up your weapon at security, and you would haul it all the way through, you know, Universal Studios with all the guests there. So you had to be very responsible. They had a security guard who would walk with you and make sure, you know, there weren't any problems. Yeah. But it was really taken very seriously because, you know, the weapons were modified to shoot what's called a 3/4 millimeter load blank. It's a crimp, so it doesn't actually have a bullet.
Okay.
So it's been modified to shoot a type of blank, but it doesn't take too much to take those parts apart and rework it into a regular weapon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was very important that we were really secure with the weapon, and we, you know, where it was in the park at all times, on the radio, was, you know, just our job, part of our job. We also had to clean it, because if something went wrong with the weapon, if we damaged it, if we broke it, a piece can fly off and really hurt someone.
So it was
super important that the weapons were maintained meticulously.
Most of those performances, it's the same thing every time. Was there any particular performance doing that show that stood out to you?
Yeah, because we did 10 shows a day, 5 days a week.
Ooh.
And it was six flights of stairs to get to the top of the theater. So it was 60 flights of stairs a day. It's like built-in exercise.
So you could eat anything you want because you're going to work
there.
Yeah,
pretty much. There was one time that they had the governor's conference when Schwarzenegger was governor.
Yeah, yeah.
He decided he was going to have the governor's conference right there at Terminator. And they used the Globe Theater for the dinner and everything.
Cool.
And we were the main attraction. And I remember because we had all these rehearsals, and at one of them, you know, Schwarzenegger shows up and he's sitting in the front row. And Mary Simpkins, who was our Kimberly, she comes out. She goes, "Is everybody ready?" And he goes, "We are ready." And it was, you know, it was Schwarzenegger, and it was all of his security, too.
Oh, okay.
So here I am coming out of the gun room with a machine gun, and there's all these eyes on me.
Yeah.
And they are staring daggers at me. So that was pretty intense. And when we did the actual show, usually we're not allowed to have anybody standing. But these were the governors and all their people, so they got to do what they wanted. And the place was packed. It was so crowded. We had just enough room to make our run through the audience like we do. But it was very exciting.
Yeah, too bad they didn't sit because they had the seats where it moved at the end, too.
Yeah, the people who were standing totally missed that. Yeah.
Missed opportunity for them. And now, with all this action, what do you like performing now? Do you like performing something a little more classical, or do you like newer material?
You know, I'm always up for anything. I think that's why I got into acting in the first place, was just the huge variety. That at one point you might be some really well-off society lady, and then the next week you're going to Hawaii to be in, you know, the middle of the jungle with your machine gun. And I love that. I love the fact that you can, you know, go from one character to the next. You know, there's sometimes you read something, you read for an audition, you're like, "Ah, I don't think that's me."
Okay.
But then there's plenty others that even if it's me in this direction or me in that direction, there's always something.
Yeah. How do you find the those different roles of, like, how do you get into it when it's, you know, when you go from the fancy lady to in the jungle? Like, how do you switch those modes?
You know, I think that there is something in each of us. You know, we all have that side that we show to our parents. And then we have that side that we show to our friends. Mm-hmm. And if you take something as simple as that, you know, is this character more like the person I'm going to be in front of my mom and dad? Mm. Or is this going to be the person I'm really comfortable with, like my buddy? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you just start in that direction and you work from there.
Well, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And then what has been the process like going from all this live action and, like, a lot of action to channeling into your voice?
Yeah, working on Mass Effect Andromeda was my first major video game character. I had been in World of Warcraft Cataclysm, and it was, like, my first foray into doing VO. So I basically channeled everything from Shakespeare, because that's what my character was like, this dragon. And so I just was this very big royal character who was just all hell-bent to destroy you, right? So that was, like, one level. But then when it came to Mass Effect, one of the things about voiceover that is so different, like, if I get a part on a TV show, I can research the TV show. I can research the writer. I can find out, you know, where my character might, you know, fall in.
Sure.
But when it comes to voiceovers, you know nothing. You find out absolutely nothing. You're sent for your audition. It's got, like, a code name. It rarely is the actual one. And you just do the audition. So when your agent calls you and says, hey, you've booked this video game, you never find out what it is. You are standing in front of the microphone with somebody from, in this particular case, Edmonton at BioWare, who is now going to give you, you know, every bit of information that you need to have, because this is a whole new game, a whole new, you know, galaxy, universe, multiverse, and you are a character no one has ever played before. So they describe everything right then and there for you. Now, if you're a gamer and you're really familiar with Mass Effect, maybe you're going to know, you know, different types of aliens. You know, you'll know what the Angara were brand new ones. You'll know what the Asari are. But for me, it was like we had to explain everything from the get-go because I didn't, you know these characters. I mean, a lot of it, too, though, if you know you're a gunner, you're a badass.
Okay,
you're a mercenary. You start pulling from certain characters. Like, for me, there were some lines that was like, oh, man, this is Han Solo. I can pull from my inner Han Solo here. Maybe this is Melinda May from S.H.I.E.L.D. because she's a real badass, and she'll come in and save you. You know, so trying to find that within me and melding something that was unique for me, that was the direction I had to take with Vetra.
Have you played any of the Mass Effect games since you've been involved with it?
Yeah. Yeah, I bought the whole trilogy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I am truly the worst gamer ever.
There's,
like, inability for my thumb and my first finger to do separate things at the same time. But I now have Mass Effect Andromeda, and what's great about it is it's a standalone game. You don't have to play the whole trilogy in order to play Mass Effect Andromeda. And I'm, like, at level 9. I'm 16% of the way in completion. I've already, you know, made a planet habitable. And I'm now feeling that great satisfaction with, you know, I managed to do this. I managed to succeed at saving the Moshi. You know? So I'm getting it. I'm getting it now. For a long time, I was like, I just can't imagine just sitting there in front of the TV. Now I get it. Yeah.
What is the basic plot of the new Mass Effect Andromeda game?
You are, as the Pathfinder, Ryder. You can either be Scott or Sarah Ryder. It is entrusted to you to basically find a place for humanity to restart. There's these arcs that are full of each species, and you have to find places that they can live. And the place that you've been told, hey, this Habitat 7 is going to be great, it's not. And so you are starting fresh. You go to these worlds, they're uninhabitable for different reasons, and you have to find all the solutions to make this place habitable. And then as you succeed, you know, you gain in areas because, oh, you just made this planet habitable, so now you're going to win this achievement or you have this skill. And so it just keeps building upon itself. The more planets you make habitable, you know, that's how you win the game.
And then how does your character fit into that universe? Well, pun intended, kind of, but yeah. Without, unless it spoils anything too much.
I'm a Turian. Mm-hmm. The Turians are actually inspired by birds. And
ooh, fun.
When I first saw my character, I'm like, how do I make this attractive? I just, you know, I'm looking at it going, wow, she yeah. looks really kind of, you know.
Sure.
Strange. Well, she's an alien. But as I fell in love with her, you know, along the way, and I totally get why people, you know, love the Turians. But how she fits in, she is actually on board the Tempest, which mm-hmm. is the ship that you use. She has actually been kind of living by her wits and protecting her sister, Cid, mm. taking care of her, and basically trying to hang in until someone is going to offer them some options, and this is the Pathfinder.
Mm. Yeah. How are you alike or dislike your character?
How are we? I'm trying to, because we are so alike at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, she's kind of gutsy. She's mm-hmm. definitely got a sarcastic, you know, wit to her. Mm-hmm. She's also, though, a true romantic. She's also she has her own insecurities, which mm. I think was one of my favorite things. She's so well written. Cheryl Chi is the woman who wrote her character.
Mm-hmm.
She's so well written that not only is she really strong when she needs to be, but you see those moments of, you find me attractive? Really?
Aww.
You know, and you can see how she can hardly believe that anyone would, you know, I've been so busy just trying to survive here mm, that, mm-hmm. you know, the very fact that you find me attractive, I can't believe it.
Mm.
So it gives her so much dimension, but that's all in the writing. And when the writing is that good, like the way she wrote this character, you just basically open up your heart and you pour it out at the microphone. And usually one of the takes that you come out with is going to be what they like and what mm-hmm. you feel good with, you know.
How many takes do you generally go through? Is it sometimes, or does it depend on the director too? Because, you know, sometimes they're like, okay, two or three, that's fine.
Yeah,
maybe
it depends
there's 10.
On what you're recording to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you are dying by fire, they're really cool at BioWare about making sure that you do not blow out your voice.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to, you know, make you do this once, and if we get it, that's it. And if, like, sometimes you do it and you go, oh, no, I didn't believe that one. I got to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You go for it for a second take. But when it comes to the dialogue ones where it's just choices, what's interesting to me is it is completely cold reading.
Mm.
You never see the script. You're Oof. Standing at the microphone with a great big monitor in front of you. And when the red bar comes up, you can speak. And sometimes they have, you know, your partner's dialogue,
mm.
and sometimes they don't, and the director has to read it. So they do their line, and you are reading the line and trying to say it at the same time. So it's total cold reading. And
wow.
then sometimes you're halfway through the line, and you realize there's some direction that says something like, curious, but with sarcasm, that you've now got a layer on top of the line that you're reading completely cold. So, you know, sometimes those lines, they take a bunch of tries.
Sure.
So that you've got the real meaning and mm-hmm. all of the nuances that they want in it. Other times, you just get really lucky and you're like, wow. And they're like, no, that was perfect on that first one. Oh, wow. Can't believe that.
You're all nice.
Yeah.
Score.
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't you think they would, like, let you read it ahead of time? Because wouldn't that save time later in terms of not having to do extra takes?
You would think, but part of the problem is, you know, actors have a reputation for releasing information that they're privy to.
So what about, like, when you get there, though?
That they could let you see it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. This must be the way they have found that mm. works best. You do have yeah. a director there who really knows what it needs to sound like. There's this one guy, Josh Dean, who directed a number of my sessions, and he's a great actor, too.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I would do it, sometimes I'd see that look on his face like, how would I do this? What should this sound like? And he would guide me through it.
Mm.
So I guess they figured this is the absolute best way to keep it safe, keep it
yeah.
secret,
sure,
and yet at the same time, you know, be time efficient, cost
yeah.
efficient.
Yeah. And we have some fan art from the show that we'll pull up in a second here and take a look at.
Yeah.
How did you come across this fan art?
when I first was announced as the character, you know, Twitter's an amazing place. You can just kind of search, like,
it is.
You know,
it's
Mass
crazy.
Effect Andromeda, yeah. and start to learn about the show that you're working on. And then when they announce your character, Vetra, you can start to search that.
Mm.
But fan art just started pouring out of the woodwork from, like, day one. As soon as they saw Vetra, they started drawing her, painting her, and it's been amazing. I actually have some great people on Twitter who always direct fan art my way that I may not have seen. But a couple of these have been done, and these are some of my personal favorites. There's a whole bunch of amazing fan art. Yeah. I think that one is, I think she goes by Bloody Lollipops, but it's
that's
also
a fun name.
21
All right.
Flowers. That's Hedrico Rubens. I hope I'm saying that right. Uh-huh. That is so my favorite. That's actually my screensaver on my phone.
Ooh.
But yeah, his use of light was amazing in that. And he's done a lot of the Mass Effect characters now. And that is that sketchbook thing. I think her name is Sammy Griffins. And she has done a lot of great Mass Effect art in general. Really mm-hmm. talented. And, you know, all these people are gamers, too. Mm-hmm. And this is, I guess, how they express their love.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's with Sarah Ryder. That's my character with Sarah Ryder. My character is bisexual, so everybody gets to love her.
And then I think, could we go back to the first one? Because I don't think we got to talk about that one. So what's going on in this one?
That one is also, that's Chrome Queen, mm-hmm. Sasha. That's Sarah Ryder and mm-hmm. Vetra, and they love each other. Somebody posted, you know, I found my soulmate. I think a lot of that happens. I think there was something with soulmate in reference to that mm-hmm. one. Yeah.
Now, not that it terribly matters in voice acting because you have to play anything, but what is it like playing a bisexual character and then you may or may not be yourself kind of a situation?
You know, I don't know. It never really even occurred to mm-hmm. me. I was just so happy when she was bisexual mm-hmm. because I just know that she appealed to everybody.
Mm, okay,
there was a
yeah.
real universal appeal to Vetra, mm-hmm. to Turians in general. Mm-hmm. And so when she was, because I didn't even know. I mean, you record stuff.
Sure.
But you don't know what the final result is going to be. They can edit it. It's just like doing a TV show.
True.
What if they cut my part out? What if they cut it down to next to nothing?
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when it turned out that she was romanceable mm-hmm. by both male mm-hmm. writer and female writer, I was really happy to see that. There's a lot of characters in it who they're either gay, they're mm-hmm. straight, or they're bi. Not everybody, they have their own reasons for who's going to be what, why.
Okay,
But I'm just really happy Vetra happened to be bisexual.
That sounds like a nice aspect to add to this game of making it more inclusive for any and all types of players out there, because then they can relate to a character maybe that they wouldn't have been able to before.
And that was one of my favorite things that I realized about the Mass Effect series, because it really lets you make so many choices.
Mm.
You drive the story. You make choices about who you're going to romance and mm-hmm. how are you going to handle this professionally or casually, like when it comes to like a military decision.
Yeah.
Are you going to destroy them, or are you going to save, you know, the people that are there and then destroy it? You know, you get to make that decision. And I love that about it, the very fact that you have this big dialogue wheel. Sometimes you have as many as 6 choices. Sometimes you're scrambling going, God, how do I pick the right one?
Do they have a time limit on the choice you make?
No, I've sometimes used the bathroom while I was like, I'm just going to go think about this one for a minute, and I come back and the dialogue wheel is still there.
That's good.
I've been told that there's some time constraints when you're playing the game, that it makes some decisions based on how long it takes you to play it.
Oh.
In which case, I'm really screwed because I'm taking a long time to play this game.
Oh, well, it's great that you have time to select your options at least, because I know I've played one before where, like, it counts down and then you're freaking out about what decision you want to make.
Right.
So it's nice that you have so many, but then it's great they have so many options, so they want you to have enough time to really, like, make that decision.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You get to drive the game the way you want to.
That really seems a great way to personalize a game as well, instead of just, like, here's the story. Well, you have to play
even
one
the
way.
Character customizations, because you can decide, okay, so say I want to be Sarah Ryder. She can be any skin tone, any ethnicity you want her to be. She can have scars or tattoos. She can have a shaved head. You know, you've got so many different options that I see so many incredible looking characters. People put that up on Twitter too. Their customized characters.
Sure, that'd be great to see.
They look incredible. And I just love the fact that people, this is who I want to be as Sarah Ryder.
So how did you customize yours?
Well, I started with a customization of Sarah Ryder, and she had like silver white hair, like platinum hair. She was really edgy looking, but from the side, I hadn't like made this part of her mouth like big enough, and she looked like, I don't know, deformed. And then I had another one that I made where her cheekbones were so sharp, you could probably hide under there under the rain. I was like, I've made some mistakes. So finally, I was like, I'm not going to worry about the customization. I'm just going to go with the default Scott Ryder and just to play the game. Because you can do so many playthroughs and do so you know, so many different ways. They also have all these different settings, which is hugely helpful for someone like me. Narrative is where you start if you've never played a video game before and you just want to play the story, and then it goes all the way up to insanity. You know, so if you are really good and you want to try, you know, the hardest level you can, I think there's like 6 levels or something.
So you can tone it down to easy if you're a novice and do it harder if you want more. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you find it a different gameplay if you are the male or female version of this character?
You know, the two actors who are the femme writer and the male writer, Freda Wolf and Tom Taylorson, they both have their own kind of vibe to them. She is the quintessential laid-back, casual girl. I mean, like your best bud and the coolest girl you've ever met in your whole life. And he has this gorgeous, sexy voice, but he's really relaxed and casual, and he can be super professional, but his voice is just like heaven.
Yeah. So then you're just playing to listen.
Yeah, yeah.
Kelly, just keep talking.
Yeah, yeah. You can talk to me all day long, Scott. Go for it. Yeah.
Now, with voice acting, you were generally alone, besides like the director or engineers. Have you met any of the other characters in real life, any of the voice actors?
I did get to meet Tom Taylorson the very last day we recorded in, Martin Luther King Day. So it was a holiday. They also had contest winners who had won small parts in Mass Effect Andromeda.
Nice.
So they were there that day, and I got to meet them, and Tom came in, and it was my very last day and the only chance I got to hug him. Yeah.
You need like a cast reunion so you all can be like, hey, that's what you're like in real life.
I know. It's true. It's like we only know each other from Twitter. Pretty much.
Okay, yeah. Well, at least you guys... so you all communicate online at least a little bit?
Those of us who do the Twitter actively? Yeah. Yeah, do the Twitter?
The Twitter? Sure.
Yeah, do Twitter actively.
It works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any special prep you do before going to a voiceover session versus what you would do for getting ready to go to set for live action?
Yeah, I try to do things like I leave off dairy for a couple days beforehand just to try to keep mucus down to a limit, minimum, and you have to stay really hydrated. And that's pretty much it. I mean, you obviously don't want to go to some situation where it's like maybe a hockey game where you're screaming your head off, because that would be really bad, but it's just about protecting your voice.
Have you run into any troubles when you were doing the game of like, oh wait, I was screaming too much or something?
I do remember I had one session where I went from 1 to 6 on one day, or 2 to 6, and then the next day I was in at 9 a.m., 9 to 1.
Ooh, bright and early.
So there was, like, very little turnaround time for my voice to recover, and I just, you know, sometimes it breaks, and you just got to do another take, you know.
What has been your favorite line on the game to say?
There are a couple things that are kind of getting a lot of play right now. There was one thing that it's so funny. It was just me laughing. And I think it was that sort of thing of, okay, you're laughing, you're in the nomad, and you're really, you know, having a great time. And I'm sure I did a variety of different laughs, but the one that they picked, I listened to it and was like, oh my God, that's just like me on any theme park thrill ride, you know, screaming and laughing, and oh, isn't this fun? And what was really funny was, you know, there's a couple glitches in the game. Almost every video game has a couple glitches. But somebody played this one glitch where the vehicle is now falling into a ravine and we're all dying. And I'm still laughing. Still laughing. Yeah.
Have you tried to recreate those moments to make that happen for
yourself?
I haven't
gotten to that point yet.
I haven't gotten there yet.
I hope
okay.
to at some point. Yeah.
Has anybody online reached out to you about specific lines that you have in the game or said anything directly?
Mm. Oh, it's been incredible. Every day, Twitter wakes me up with at least like 20 plus notifications every day. And throughout the day, if I walk away from my phone for a few hours, I'll come back to 20 more. It's incredible. Everybody is... You know, they're sharing at this point, like their favorite moments. Hey, here's a screenshot of my favorite moment, a picture of their Scott and Vetra, things like that. They are capturing those little bits like that, the crazy little things that happen, and reposting it so I can really enjoy it. I think that's the thing that blows me away the most is Twitter has... You know, an incredible place for fans to really share everything they love and hate, you know, because you're always going to have that. But between the art and people sharing their favorite moments, I'm loving it. I absolutely love it.
Oh, it's Twitter is amazing because now fans can directly reach out to the stars they love because otherwise, maybe you sent them snail mail, maybe they would get it, but Twitter could be very direct of like, hey, it's my opinion of the game. Has there been any hater stuff going on?
Well, from the day one that I started checking out, you know, Mass Effect Andromeda, I think there's always going to be, you know, some camp of people who, for whatever reason, they didn't like, you know, the Mass Effect. There was some bad history at one point with someone who headed it up. Mm. And I think they were just kind of, they had it in for it. Mm. So you do have some of that. Then as the game was released, there's bugs. There's things with the facial animations that, you know, I know that they're constantly putting together patches to try and fix things. I don't think I get it quite as much because the nice thing about being an alien is my lips don't move like a human's lips move. So I'm less prone to having those quirky facial things. And one of the things that, because it's a you choose, you have the dialogue with,
right,
the facial animations, because you have six choices. It's not like if it's just an animated scene and you have someone who goes in and knows exactly what the lines are and they can animate it to detail. This is done by algorithms of the computer so that's how you have all these different choices. To some degree, they go back in and they animate by hand. But a lot of it, because of the choices, I think that's why it's harder to have as polished facial animation because you've given people so many dialogue options.
Sure.
You know?
Did you move your mouth any particular way then when you were doing the dialogue or just you
talked? No, I just talked normally and then they add an effect on top.
Okay.
And that's what kind of like, I guess, really sells it at the end. But no, it was just me talking. You know, a couple times I had to always be aware because Vetra has a deeper tone of voice or my deepest tones.
Can you give me a sample?
Well, basically, I'd be talking like this, Vetra Nix, Gunner, Wrangler, and everything in between, you know, so that was it. But then, you know, when you were yelling in combat, most of the time when we're trying to get somebody's attention, we bring our voice up
so that
we can be heard a little bit more.
Yeah.
So trying to find that balance of where can I, how much can I bring my voice up and still be in the Vetra range? You know, we all have a huge range that we speak in and sing in and everything else. So that was just one of the big things, always making sure that I had it in as deep a range as I could find it.
Did you have to find you had to be in any particular physical posture when you were doing that voice, or you just remembered, like, speak deeper?
I am definitely, because of all of my stage and, you know, on-camera background, I'm a physical actor. So if they tell me I'm hanging on for dear life, I am hanging on for dear life as I attempt to say all these lines. I think a lot of people can, you know, they can sit on a chair and do all these lines. But no, I had to stand. I had to stand and be, you know, using my whole body just because that's just kind of the performer that I am.
Sure. If that's the way you got to do it, that's the way you got to do it.
Yeah.
Was there any particular challenge, or was there anything unique about having to do so many different variations, because it is choose your own adventure? Or, you know, because if there's like a regular, like a film, you know, there's one narrative or something like that, but with all these different versions, how was that experience?
You know, they basically, you are acting off of, hopefully, the other person's lines.
Okay, yeah,
so if they do have, you know, Scott Ryder saying this line, and then here's the variation where he's like, no, I don't really like you. It's just, you know, let's just be friends. You're reacting off of that. So it's again, it's just like acting. You're just reacting off of what you're given. A couple times you are the one who's like leading a certain conversation, and you just kind of have to find where in that wheel we were talking about is this with your character. Am I being really professional here, or am I really being a wise ass here?
Yeah, what's more fun to do?
The wise ass.
Yeah.
That's definitely a lot of my favorite lines.
Yeah,
will be the ones where I'm just being a wise ass.
Have you used any of the lines from the game and say them in real life?
You know, because I don't even have, like, a script. I never memorized them. Sometimes they came in and went right out of my head as quickly as I'd done them. In the beginning, I'd always have, like, a notepad. And if it was a great line, I would just write that puppy down because I loved it. But, no, now that, and it's, like, kind of a weird out-of-body experience, as people play these clips where I said something, you're like, oh, I remember that. I remember saying that now. You know, but, boy, I did, like, 11 sessions. So, 4-hour sessions, you know, it's 41 hours of talking as Vetra, just about, so,
You kind of mentioned out-of-body experience. What is it like playing the game? Have you gotten to the point where you've met yourself in the game by now, right?
Yeah.
What's that like, hearing yourself?
I thought it would be really weird, because when I watch myself, like, in a clip of something, I'm always, like, really judgmental. But there's something about Vetra, probably because she doesn't look like me, that I'm really cool with it.
Is it different than when a character does look more like you, or, you know, you're in, or if you see yourself, like, live action, then you're like...
Oh. Yeah, because I think there's so many different things to be aware of in live action, you know, because you're also thinking, you know, which hand did I hold this in? You know, all that sort of stuff at the same time of which side did I, you know, cross to or look at or whatever. You have to be aware of all of those things. So... I think, you know, also just as actors, we're so judgmental. We're just looking at ourselves, looking for, oh, God, my hair on that side, that does not look good. You know, we're just picking apart those things. And I just feel like there's a freedom of, like, not picking apart those things, that I'm enjoying playing the game. I'm really deep into it. But at the same time, when I say something, it's like either I go, oh, yeah. And then every once in a while you go, is that the take they wanted? Okay. Well, who knows?
You don't really have a choice over that. So
No, you do three takes, and maybe you liked one, but maybe there was something about that one that was it.
Have you had any of your friends or family play the game and comment on it, or do you know a lot of gamer people?
I do. I have a lot of friends who are gamers. You know, I don't know if they're Mass Effect gamers, though.
Right, okay.
A lot of them, you know, may play a lot of the more military guys. The stunt guys will play a lot of the more military games, like Call of Duty and things like that. But, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to, as more people have played the game, somebody going, yeah, I was playing this game and I could have sworn it was you. Yeah, it was.
You're like, yes, that was me. Now, speaking of kind of recognition, with live action, obviously people see you. They know exactly what you look like. How is it different? How's that experience been for video games? Because they more just hear your voice. Because you did comment on people reaching out via Twitter, but...
Yeah.
You know.
I think most people use stuff like IMDb to see what you've been in. And, you know, then they can watch your demo reel online or whatever clips you might have online. I don't know if there will ever be that same kind of recognition. Because I could be walking down the street and they might love the game and love my character, but they won't know it's me. At some point, maybe there'll be some, you know, con opportunities and I'll be able to... You know, go and say, hey, I'm here on this floor, guys. Come say hi.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, so,
have you been to many conventions?
When I did Portal, the following year, I did go to Comic-Con. And I had an amazing experience. You know, just a lot of people are just huge fans of that video game.
Yeah, speaking of another video game.
Lots of great pictures and meeting, you know, the fans. And it's kind of cool because Portal, little kids can play it. There's, you know, not inappropriate stuff for them. So, you know, and I love it when some little kid comes up and you're just like, you're basically their Princess Leia.
Oh, you know? That's cute.
Yeah.
So you did Portal, No Escape, and... So talk about what is that film project like?
Well, when I was the stunt coordinator on that, a guy named Keith Adams, he was the original one, the original stunt coordinator. He was asked, you know, can you bring in some Sarah Connor types by Dan Trachtenberg?
And like, he was like, I got that.
Yeah, right. He was my original John Connor.
Ah, okay.
So I went in and I did the audition and got very lucky to get the part. Then James Logan went on to be the stunt coordinator when we actually shot the video, which we did over basically 3 days. These really crazy locations in downtown LA. I mean, Dan had found amazing places like a meat packing plant that had been abandoned for many years. I mean, the places that you know are haunted. They just simply have to be haunted. So we shot down there for 3 days, and it took a year and a half, basically, for the special effects to be completed. And so when Dan then released it at Comic-Con in 2011, that was the first time people had seen it, and then it went on YouTube. And it was so viral that we had 1 million hits a day for the first 5 days. 5 million hits in 5 days.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's been incredible, and I still get, you know, when I was first announced as Vetra Nix, there were a lot of people who were coming on going, oh, my God, you were in Portal. I can't believe it. Now you're Vetra. You know.
Yeah. How long is the actual runtime of that?
Six minutes.
Okay, nice short. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 6 minutes, and it's pretty much like a really nice action demo reel for me. Yeah.
And what's your character?
My character is the unidentified test subject, and a lot of people think that she's Shell. You know, and if they want to, that's okay. But Dan and I knew, we talked about it earlier, we don't know who I am. You know, I'm just in this cell, and I discover, you know, that there's this weapon hidden in the walls. So, and how I get out. And he always was inspired by Joss Whedon, you know, saying how he loves what happens when you take somebody and you put them in peril and you see what they're made of. And I just recently got a chance to watch again 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was the movie that he did recently. And it's the same thing. You put this woman in peril and you see what she's made of. It's a really, that's a great movie. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Not yet, but it's on my list.
Yeah.
With Portal, now, with going through the portals, was there any sort of, you know, it's like there's a visual where it's a circle.
Yeah.
Now, is it one of those you have to, like, you know, dive through, or does it?
We had everything.
How's
from,
that work?
Like, there's one point where I'm jumping in and out of portals with the gun. I've just fired them, and there was just a big green screen with a huge hole in it that I had to jump through. There was one thing where they actually had to throw me out through one of the portals in the wall.
Oh.
And I had two stunt guys who were literally just throwing me through it with the gun. And that's when I take out the guy in the hallway. And if you look, there's like a big, you know, scrape on my shoulder. That was from doing that. That was a real scrape. Just because, you know, you got people throwing you. And maybe you're going to land. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're going to hit the wall. But yeah, that they did have green screens most of the time to represent where the portal would be.
I was like envisioning, like, if they had a hula hoop, like, you need to jump through this, or you know, like,
not
to explain,
not that skill. They actually, I had a great stunt double on that, Heidi Germain Schnappoff. She does like the stuff like the fall off the roof, firing the weapon at the same time, the tumble where she does the diving roll with the weapon. I just come out of it, you know, and try to look like I did it. It's like those things that if I did it, I would look like I was making an effort to do it. And she does it, makes it look effortless.
Yeah.
And so she was fantastic, and I'm really grateful for her.
Do you feel your ability to do stunts has added to your opportunities?
I think so. I know there's definitely been a lot of things that I got because they couldn't decide, do we get an actress and then get a stunt double for her?
Okay,
or do we find somebody who can do both elements of it, and maybe we just, you know, tone down the stunts. One of the first things I did was the Halloween Horror Nights that Universal did. And they had actually written this, Pat Milicano had written this great script, but it was kind of hard for people who are not actors to actually handle all the dialogue.
Which performance was that?
This was the very first one of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I was Turner Murdoch, this cyber witch who was looking for a virgin's body to inhabit.
Fun.
So they kept the stunts, you know, to a minimum where I didn't have to do anything too tricky. But at the same time, I know that was that combo of being able to be really physical and be able to handle dialogue was what got me that.
And since you enjoy that physical aspect of it so much, would you ever try to get further along in stunt ability, or
I'm going to leave that to the professionals, you know, because it is so easy and people get hurt all the time in stunts. They are putting their bodies on the line. And, you know, the simplest thing could take me out of on camera for a long time.
Yes.
You know, and I can't take that risk, you know. It's and there's too many really good stunt people out there, and I would much rather be the person who makes it possible for them to have a job, you know, as my stunt double than to try and possibly do what they do.
So pretty much whatever's safe enough you'd want to do, and then anything more, you're like,
you know, swimming in water that's, you know, ridiculously cold and then doing a fight scene.
Yeah.
I got that. But if you need me to fall off of a building holding a weapon, you know, I don't think so.
Hit by a car, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah. I've had to do some near miss on, with car stuff. But, you know, I just, there's so many really good professionals out there. Let them get the hit.
Thinking of the game, actually, would you ever try to dress up as your character?
Yeah, unfortunately, she's like 6 foot six. That's taking me right out of that.
Maybe?
Yeah, a little tiny Vetra.
Sure.
Teeny weeny Vetra.
It's a mini.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm nowhere near tall enough, but actually it was one of the art pieces, Sammy Griffin. She's actually trying to get her boyfriend, who is apparently really tall and thin, to dress up as Vetra, and she's going to cosplay as Sarah Ryder. Oh. And that is what I want to see.
Oh, that's adorable. Yeah. Have you had anybody cosplay her yet, or these are just, you know, since
I
it just came out?
I have seen people are actually working on, and they're cool enough to like send me, hey, I just cast this part of the you know, costume. So I love seeing that sort of stuff. I mean, yeah, people on Twitter, please keep it coming. I really enjoy it. I'm thriving on it.
Yeah, it seems like such a neat opportunity to be able to interact with your fans, and it's great that you do, because some actors are like, whatever, but like, that's so great that you're like, hey, I know, I love it, guys, keep it coming.
It is. It's really fun. I mean, it makes me think of, like, you know, there was a time if you did theater, there were people who were waiting outside because they wanted to meet you and have you, you know, sign their playbill and stuff like that. Well, we don't really have a lot of that these days.
Can have the box cover of the game sign now.
Right. Well, I've set up a P.O. box, and I have someone who has already asked, will you sign my cover? And he's going to send it to me, and I'll sign it and send it back to him. So, you know, if anybody wants that, so I am more than happy to, you know, you send it to me. I got a P.O. box.
Awesome. Yeah. Where can people find that information? Is it on your Twitter then?
I will make it, like, I'll put it on my, I have a Danielle Rain Facebook fan page.
Okay.
That's a great place. You can reach out to me and I will send you what that is. You can also send that information to me on, you know, that request on Twitter. It might start to, like, get a little bogged down at some point, so be patient. And I can hang on to, I think, the messages longer in the Facebook fan page, you know?
Possibly. I feel their messaging might be a little better than Twitter because it's not the same have to follow thing, you know, Facebook you can just go to.
Exactly.
And is the Facebook just your name and your first and last
it's
name?
It's at Danielle Rain.
Awesome. How do you spell Rain, just in case people
R-A-Y-N-E.
Don't know?
R-A-Y-N-E.
And what is your Twitter handle so people can go on there too?
That's Danielle Rain as well.
Oh, nice. I kept it
simple. You got Danielle Rain Facebook fan page and at Danielle Rain.
Do you do other social media too?
Well, I have my own website. Okay. I do have Instagram accounts, but I'm kind of slow on those. There's this, you know, if this, that, then that, you know, where you can link them all up.
Yes.
I had them linked, and then things were double posting, and I'm like, I have to figure out how this truly works, because the double posting thing makes me, the anal part of me, go nuts.
Yeah.
I just double posted something. Nobody's going to ever forgive me this one.
No, you know? I think it'll be fine. But that's when you go right away and delete. No, the worst is you tweet on Twitter, and there's a spelling error.
Yes.
And you're just like, ugh. Yeah. Then you got to do all over again. And
Do you make the decision? Am I going to change and to at, or am I just going to say and not at?
You know? Somebody posted this thing on Twitter, and it got tons of likes and retweets, and there's a spelling error, and they commented, they're like, my most popular tweet has a spelling error, and it's like, my life.
Yeah. I've had a couple of those where I just got to let it lie.
Yeah.
I just got to live with it.
So Mass Effect Andromeda's already out, but what's up next?
I have a movie coming out this summer called 100 Yards. Mm-hmm. And ironically, the guy who is the face model, the face and body model for Scott Ryder, is actually in the movie with me. So I have hugged both the physical Scott Ryder and the voice of Scott Ryder. I'm probably one of the few people who can actually say that. So that comes out this summer. I play Karen Porter in that movie. I've also got Speed Date, a little tiny part in that, but I love these ladies who created this movie. I also did a movie called Penumbra for them. So Speed Date is coming out, and I think they're going to be at Comic-Con as well as, I think it's the Newport Beach Film Festival. Okay. It's a short film. And then I have a couple other projects, but in this day of NDAs, you can't...
zip.
Yeah, yeah.
But they got to follow you on Twitter or Facebook, and then they can be up to date on
find out.
Yep, are you going to Comic-Con yourself?
I'm thinking about it. I have not made a plan yet. That can be so crazy. I know that one time that I went, it was like, you better like Times Square on New Year's Eve if you're willing to go to Comic-Con.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Do they give you any, like, merch? I feel you should be wearing your character as, like, a shirt. So that's like, this is me.
No, they haven't. But they're free to send me anything they'd like.
Yeah. Ooh, or fan art. They could design a shirt. That would be cool.
Oh, yeah. Somebody actually did a black and white version of Veteran X that I think would be an amazing T-shirt logo or a tattoo.
There you go, fans. Yeah. You know, like, how to get an awesome shirt going.
Yeah.
That's fun. Awesome. Well, congratulations, and that's so exciting about Mass Effect, because that's a pretty big game in, like, I guess I was like, industry? No, it's universe. Like, you know, that franchise. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was amazed when I found out how huge it was. I mean, you're literally like, okay, you show up for a job. It could be the tiniest little internet video game, or it could be this huge thing. And it just happened to be this wonderful, huge thing.
Nice. Well, that's so exciting to be part of, and congratulations on your upcoming stuff, so now people can look forward to those. Thank you so much for talking with me. It's really fun hearing about the game and all this fun action stuff. It's like, now I want to, like, go take, like, a martial arts class. I feel like I'm not not up to
par. We'll go together. We'll take martial arts together. Yeah. Good.
Go do a stunt day or, you know, cool. Parkour class or something like that.
Yes, yeah.
That's up next.
That's
but
the best.
Nothing too crazy. I don't want to break anything either because, yes, you're out of commission way
too
long.
You're on camera, too.
Yeah. I'll be like, my cast, be like, all right, no leaning. You already let people know where to find you, so if you guys go find her on social media, Danielle Rain, she's fantastic voice actor, live action, a little bit of everything, and overall badass. Yes. You guys can find me online at Carrie D Lane, and that's KARIDLANE. And make sure you subscribe to AfterBuzz so you can be up to date on all kind of awesome programs like this one. And again, thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.